Where's all of this stuff? I don't know if I'm reading this. Where is it? This is definitely not here. This is not in this thing.
Episode 4. Sure? Yes, it is.
Episode 4.
Which file are you in?
I'm down as far as you went through some good games. If you looked up UFO AI, that's the bottom. That's the last one.
We just missed it then. Go up to 4.
Oh, yes, I see. Excellent.
These ones in here are actually numbered 1 to 6.
Carry on.
I was thinking of volunteering in a retirement home, but I don't actually think I need to because I just have to come on a show with Dave every couple of weeks.
Full Circle Podcast, Episode 6, for Tuesday, May 4th, 2010. Mark's Space Brain from the future. In this steam-powered episode, those English guys annoy what's left of the audience again.
The Full Circle Podcast is the companion to Full Circle Magazine, the independent magazine for the Ubuntu community. Find us at www.fullcirclemagazine.org/podcast.
Hello world. And welcome to episode 6 of the Full Circle Podcast. And he's back. The missing man has reappeared. Say hello, Mr. Dave Wilkins.
Hello.
And with us as ever, Mr. Ed Hewitt.
Hello.
Well then, gentlemen, so what have we all been up to since we last got together? Go on, Dave.
Having taken a lengthy break to do various things, I've actually managed to fit in a lot of Ubuntu in. So I've had a look at tons and tons and tons of games, which are, some have been impressive, some have been less so. And I'm very, very pleased and proud to announce that I am one of the first people in this country to have a contract Nexus One, the Google phone, bought on contract with Vodafone. This is probably best done in a review next week.
I think so.
What I can say is it's awesome.
Well, your task
makes iPhones look rather cheap in comparison, I'd say.
Ed, what have you been up to?
I've been bug fixing. That's what I've been doing. Bug fixing Lucid Lynx. And most of the bugs I've tried to file haven't hit the final release, but I'll try and get them into Meerkat. And that's about it, really. Not a lot. Oh, a bit of blogging as well. I put my review of 10.04 on the blog. And I've been also trying to find a new WordPress theme, because the one I've got is fairly popular, and I'm kind of keen not to have a theme which is used by a lot of people.
Well, speaking of WordPress themes, we've actually got a new theme up on the Full Circle Magazine site, if anybody hasn't seen it yet. It's looking rather smart. Which brings me neatly on to what have I been doing since last time. I've got as far as installing the release candidate of Lucid on the spare box, and GNOME Shell is still not working. My NVIDIA drivers are still not working. And I've disabled Compiz on every machine to try and find out whether or not it makes any difference to what I'm doing. And the answer seems to be not an awful lot. I shall be going investigating NVIDIA and Nuvo drivers and anything else I can find to try and fix that pile.
Why have you upgraded to the RC and not the final release?
Because that was as far as I got when we had the last-minute bug and the respin of the final ISOs.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which will be an interesting tale, or possibly not, to those who haven't spotted it. There was a last-minute bugette which was filed against the installer for Lucid.
I thought it was various, Grub, wasn't it?
Well, various people were trying to install a dual boot, and Grub then failed to find their second partition on reboot, which did cause a certain amount of consternation, because any new users at that point would have thought that Ubuntu has deleted their Windows install, which, as a statement of policy, might not be a bad thing. If you decide to install Ubuntu, we'll just delete Windows 7. Yes, no, never mind. Sorry, David, you were going to say.
Well, I mean, the thing is, having experienced a similar thing as a new user myself, I remember it being quite a runaround to try and either remove Grub or get to Windows once you've already installed Grub when things aren't working properly. And yeah, it's not so great.
No, there was a bit of a workaround, but it involved digging around on a terminal command line, and that went down like a lead balloon as well, because everybody said, yeah, well, if it's broken, surely we've got to delay the release until it's fixed, because that's something of a PR nightmare waiting to happen. I think there was
an extra... It doesn't work, never mind.
Yes, we can't actually install your operating system the way that you wanted us to, or the way that you asked us, but we're just going to carry on anyway, and make you think we've deleted all your data. Not so good. So there was a slight delay of about 24 hours while they did a respin of all the ISOs for download, and I think fortunately it's working, but by that stage I thought, I might just hold off for a little bit longer. And then my parents arrived for the weekend. That was that plan gone. So, shall we get on with the show?
This episode's news.
News section. Ed, do you want to go with the exclamation mark?
The big news this week is the final release of Ubuntu 10.04. So it's now safe and stable to upgrade to 10.04 or do a fresh install. And we're going to have a discussion about our favourite things in our opinion section later on in the show.
And our second item of news is that alongside it, the first published copy of the Ubuntu manual was released by the Ubuntu Manual Project, as we were discussing in episode 5 with Mr. Benjamin Humphrey. So they've got their first edition out. Expect many more from them as the releases roll by. And also, there is a quick start guide, which is the abridged version of the manual, if you like. That also came out. Next one, Ed.
You can now pre-order Ubuntu 10.04 Ship It CDs. So if you like to collect those Ship It CDs like I do, you can now pre-order one, and they'll send you one in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Although I would say, be kind to the planet and don't go ordering CDs to be shipped about across the earth unless you desperately need one. You can always download the ISOs. It's really not that difficult.
Thing is, it's a good way of getting new users involved, because when you get a new operating system, it's a lot more in keeping with the traditional way of thinking to just to get to order a CD, have a CD arrive, and install from there. I suppose to messing around and burning your own and playing with ISOs, which most new users won't even know what they are.
They are really nice, and it's quite nice to have a collection of the official burnt Ubuntu CDs. I've got every single one since 6.06, so I kind of want to continue the trend.
The funny thing is, since I installed Ubuntu, I've suddenly started acquiring tons of official Ubuntu CDs. It's one of those weird things.
Very good.
There's going to be a new feature in 10.10, or it's going to start to be implemented in 10.10. The notification area, which has been a feature since Windows 95, was designed to notify the user of changes going on with the computer, such as a clock, a battery, the network. But over the years, people have misinterpreted what the notification means and treated it like a place where to minimize applications to. So you have your Skype in there or your Pigeon in there. Canonical have realized that not how the notification area was designed back in Windows 95. So now they're changing it so that they're going to block out applications from using the notification area and only allow the Ubuntu-approved notification applets, such as Sound, Network, Rhythmbox, in the notification area.
Yes.
Okay, hang on. So Ubuntu is what wants to tell users, are telling users that they are wrong with the way they're using their computers, and are proposing a better, a slightly less efficient and more annoying way of doing it.
No. They are telling developers not to use the notification area as a general dumping ground for all of their trashy little icons. There we go.
I like having my Skype icon on the notification area. I like having my views icon there. Makes things very convenient. I mean, I don't have to keep rotating my compass cylindery thing around all the time. I mean, I can just click on it and it appears.
It is, but it's wrong though. Even Microsoft has telling people that they're doing the wrong thing, and actually with Windows 7.
That's pretty much what Microsoft does.
So now both Canonical and Microsoft are complaining to users and developers that they're doing the wrong thing. And in Windows 7, they've now started to call the system tray, as we all call it, the notification area, and started to treat it like that. And now Canonical have realized the problem and going to start utilizing it more in 1010.
It's interesting that we've hit a point now where everybody's starting to look back at the design paradigms we've been stuck with for the last 10 years or so and started saying there must be a better way of doing this. And aren't we all getting sloppy, and isn't this all getting a little bit out of control? Which I think
Surely the best way to look back at things and say, are we doing things right, is not to look back and say, well, it sure would be good if you went back to the way things were 10 years ago and then just return to the way things were. I would personally urge Canonical to, rather than removing things from the notification area, to try and prevent things from starting using the notification area in the first place. Because some users, like me, have become somewhat reliant on it. And things like Skype, that belongs in the notification area.
You could argue that.
Dave, the problem is that Skype's not notifying of anything. It's just sitting there in a minimized state. That's the whole point. The notification area is to let you know what things going on with your computer, but not for you to need to interact with it. That's the whole point of Notify OSD. It's to let you know what's going on, but you don't have to do anything about it.
Your average user that doesn't generally really care what's going on with the little tiny bits about their computer. The general user wants the computer to be used as more like a tool. They care about what the computer is going to be doing rather than how the computer is working. Thus,
I'm in danger of doing a Dan Lynch and saying, we'll keep an eye on this story and see how it develops. While we're on the topic of user interface design, our second story on this line is Windicators. Ed, go on, give Dave the benefit of one of your excellent summaries.
Thank you. This is another new feature coming into 1010. And basically, they're going to stick some indicators on the right-hand side of every window. This is the reason why they've moved the buttons to the left-hand side. And if you've got the buttons on the right still, you're not going to have them there for much longer because the Windicator is going to live there. And basically, the idea is to give you notifications of that specific window. So if you're using, for example, Rhythmbox, you'll have notifications to be able to play, pause, turn the sound down of that particular window. So some examples they're using is that you're going to be able to know, you can have a status showing you on or offline to let you know if your mail client or Firefox is on or offline. You can have an unsaved indicator. So if you're using OpenOffice, it will show you an indicator saying that this work is unsaved at the moment. You can have a progress indicator, basket indicator for when you're buying things online, a sharing indicator to show people who are also viewing this document at the same time, and the volume indicator so you can turn down or up the volume on that particular window.
Scene. And, very nice.
And those are the early examples that Mark Shuttleworth gave. There's a whole raft of discussion started on how these Windicators should be used, where they should be used, what's the appropriate sort of level of interaction that you get out of them. I was going to say, with this story and the previous one, it's nice to see that all of these design ideas are now being proposed early, put up for discussion, and the world and his wife are now pitching in and throwing in comments and feedback and ideas and counter-proposals, which I think answers some of the flack that came up about moving the window control buttons in the first place, which was dropped on us as a fait accompli 3 weeks before or 4 weeks before an LCS release came out. Well, this time, the major user interface changes are being discussed nice and early so that some comment can be taken into account. It's still not a democracy. We're not going to get to vote, but at least everybody's opinion will be taken into account. And I think that's probably the best that we could ask for. And if you look on Mark Shuttleworth's blog where he announced the Windicators, there's a whole stack of comments and counter-comments and debates and design ideas being posted, looking really, really good, actually. There's an awful lot of good thinking going on behind it, people proposing different ways of using it and highlighting different concerns. So out of that, we should get some really good, tight design ideas. If we're not, then we're all doing it wrong.
The only opinion I've got on the Windicators at the moment is that the name is amazing.
Name, we're calling them Windicators.
It's a brilliant idea, yeah.
Doesn't it sound a bit like Windows?
But that's fine.
I see, we'll steal Microsoft's trademarks from under their noses.
We'll steal their thunder. It's fine.
I mean, all these weeks ago, we had all these, we were all grumbling and having these debates about whether to have the buttons on the right or on the left. But it seems that in Mark Shuttleworth's space brain from the future, he already had a plan conceived for the right-hand side at the top of the window. And honestly, now that these are this idea's coming to light.
We always knew that his space brain had the ideas for what he was going to do about it. What unfortunately didn't happen was any kind of explanation coming out at the time when they moved the buttons at the 11th hour.
It was a surprise, wasn't it?
So, as you say, now it all begins to make sense. This is what should have happened 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Well, it's very encouraging to know there is actually a plan. It's not just an arbitrary decision based on the flight of birds or sheep or something.
They have 177 days to get it right. So let's hope they do a better job than they did with the button change.
I'm sure they will, though. It looks like this is actually quite a good idea, and it's something that looks handy and will actually increase the ease of my computing experience, and that can only be a good thing.
Our last two news stories were a couple that I threw in. It's not particularly a Linux-specific story, much less a Ubuntu-specific story. However, there was an announcement about Facebook Docs, which is being powered by Microsoft Fuse Labs technology. If I just skim through the press release blurb, Docs are similar to Microsoft's Online Office Live product, with the ability to build PowerPoint, Excel, and Word documents online. And I think the general verdict is it's not yet Google Docs, but if it's got Microsoft's backing, who knows? We'll watch that space as well and see if they can actually build something that will rival Google Docs and get everybody switching.
But Facebook, this is all more of Facebook putting itself into opposition of Google, which has happened more and more over the past couple of weeks. Facebook saying that it sees itself expanding and defeating Google in the sort of world market.
This is the Facebook fight back, I think, because they've now got millions and millions of users, and they're now trying to fight back and get to the point where they saturate every facet of your online life in the way that Google has been threatening to do, and in some cases is doing. Given that Facebook gets millions and millions of hits per day from users all around the world, and you can see why Microsoft wants to jump on that particular bandwagon and fight back against Google as well. So it's a case of these two getting together, and you would never have imagined a few months ago Microsoft and Facebook getting into bed together, but I think it's a question of my enemy's enemy is my friend.
I can see a point in having Google pervading every inch of our daily lives, because Google makes things more efficient. Whereas it's true what Facebook says, the future of the internet is indeed going to be more social.
Facebook is already everywhere. Have you seen the like button that's starting to creep into various websites and
Even on YouTube, but that's just because it's a better way of rating things than with stars, because stars are just stupid. Everybody always votes things that they like 5 stars. So it's any other number of stars, apart from 0, is completely unnecessary.
See, I think that it's been pointed out that Facebook like button is now much more insidious and possibly sinister than a lot of the other social networking tools out there. Because as soon as you hit the like button, it's adding to your Facebook profile.
Fair enough.
The last story has been rumbling around for the last 2 or 3 weeks, which concerns IBM, who, according to civil commentators, have reneged on their patent pledge that they gave not to sue anybody in the open source community for violating a number of patents that they placed in the public domain. And unfortunately, because there's a court case going on with a company called Turbo Hercules, everybody's running around screaming and behaving like illiterate children throwing stones at IBM, which is poor sport at the best of times, but particularly ill-informed in this one. So I'm going to hang on to that thought and come back to that one and have my little rant later on.
I'm very interested, actually.
So, our review of issue 36 of Full Circle magazine, which is our third anniversary issue, as it proudly proclaims. What did we like in issue 36, gentlemen?
There was a how-to article about how to use Google effectively, which was quite interesting, about certain commands before you search a word, which will bring up different results, which was quite good.
You know, we should have colluded on this before we wade into this one, because I was going to point that one out as well.
Yeah, well, I can point it out too. It's very useful. Yes. But I can see myself referring back to this article in the future, because I'm always trying to look for obscure things and I'm not getting them. And you'd be able to use little search codes in Google, be very, very handy for that.
So yes, I think Lucas has done everybody a big favour by reminding us how many more options and commands you can get on that thing to make it work more efficiently. So well done, Lucas. Anything else that we liked? I'm still collecting together the installments of the photo editing in GIMP, because I have got some photos that I need to do some serious photo editing on that were taken in some very, very strange dark places. And so they're going to need some extensive retouching, particularly the ones of me.
Well, I've been GIMPing quite a bit lately as well, actually. I just created a very exciting new logo for the university's fencing club, and it looks amazing. It looks actually, honestly amazing. So all thanks to GIMP. I love GIMP, actually. People are always complaining about how difficult it is to use, but I've always struggled to use Photoshop, and GIMP's always been fine for me. Looking at the Full Circle magazine, top five scanning apps. I was still young and ignorant about Linux, I purchased an Epson print scanner without even checking whether it was compatible with things, thinking, oh, it'll definitely be compatible. Everything's compatible with Ubuntu. Come to find that it wasn't at all. And it took me quite a long time to get the printer working, and I just couldn't get the scanner working. But in Karmic, I managed to eventually get the scanner working. It took me a long, long time of searching, and I eventually found various drivers and things, and strange plug-in type things. I'm using just the regular Xsane, but it works very nicely. Also, I'd like to plug Ed's gaming panel.
Thank you.
It's exciting as always. I was actually thinking of getting Doom 3, although poor story. Story is quite important for me when I choose a game. But multiplayer, I don't have any friends, so it's all right.
But you've got to play for the single player. The single player missions are brilliant, and
I'll probably get it anyway. I'm not a big fan of horror games, but when they're really well made, it's all right. I mean, something like Fear, for example. I've got Fear working in Wine a while ago. That was really nice. No, it wasn't very good as a horror game. It was really good as a regular shooter. And now I digress. Back to the show.
We're almost doing our game section already.
yeah, I didn't intend to.
That's right.
I'm not talking about Fear for quite a while, in fact. I might even do that in a few weeks' time. That's a good idea. Good idea, Robin. Thanks for that.
Excellent.
One.
Excellent. Thank you. Anytime. Okay, this is about the point where I say it's time for a break, except this time I'm not sure what's going in it. So we'll have a break while I think about that, and we'll come back.
We've been keeping up for a while, I think.
Contribute. The Full Circle podcast, like the magazine, is nothing without the contributions of the Ubuntu community. If you want to join us, want to suggest ideas for news, opinions, reviews, Creative Commons music tracks, or just want to give us a pat on the back, contact us at podcast@fullcirclemagazine.org.
Our opinion.
And we're back. So, opinion section for this week. Hot off the back of the release of 10.04 Lucid Lynx, I think Ed is going to lead us through.
To celebrate the release of Ubuntu 10.04, I want to kind of ask a series of questions to you all about what you thought to the release.
I think I've got to sit out for this one, as I must confess that I haven't yet downloaded 10.04.
Shame on you.
And I will be updating via the update manager, as I always try to do.
Right. First question is, what is your favourite feature or features of 10.04?
Although I'm not using it an awful lot yet, I think the Me menu has got the capacity to bring a lot more people on board with Ubuntu, just because it's starting to pull together all of those annoyingly disparate social networking things that so far live in system trays and different workspaces and are just scattered around everywhere. And this is something that could bring them all usefully together in one place. So I think that's probably the most inventive new feature they've put in.
Yeah, same for me. I'm quite a big fan of the Me menu, as well as the new indicator applets. And I love the new theme. They've done a very good job with the look of the and feel of the operating system now.
I look forward to tomorrow with eager anticipation.
What is the most hated feature of 10.04?
I'm going to sound like a terribly sycophantic fanboy now, but I don't actually hate anything yet. Give me another few weeks, and I might.
What about your drivers? Because you can't get your 3D effects to work.
No, but I blame that on the on having a couple of fairly rubbish Nvidia cards. So I'm not going to blame the software for that just yet.
Well, I am, because I hate the Nova drivers. It's a bad decision to put them into an LTS because they don't work, and I can't do a fresh install of Ubuntu anymore because the Nova drivers don't work.
So tell me, when you're choosing which drivers to use, do you have the option of rolling back to the old ones?
No, it appears to have taken those out and gone straight to the Nova drivers.
So you're telling me I probably shouldn't update 10.04 if I rely very strongly on graphics for my user experience?
If you're doing an update via the update manager, they will work fine. It's because when you boot the live CD, it will use the Nova drivers, which don't work. So, but if you're using the binary NVIDIA drivers, they work fine, but you can't use those until you've actually booted up into Ubuntu.
Understood. How did you get around to actually getting the NVIDIA drivers working?
I think it's hit and miss, because what I used to do in the past, if my graphics card or my monitor didn't work, I used to unplug the monitor, boot the CD, and plug it back in, and it would work. But you can't do that anymore now, so I can't load up the 10.04 live CD. So now I can't do a fresh install at all now. Unless to get this bug fixed. Okay, have you had any problems with 10.04 yet?
Well, that is where I'm grumbling, because I can't get GNOME Shell to work and the NVIDIA drivers are an ongoing issue with me. But I don't know whether that's my stupidity or the NVIDIA drivers really are broken.
Are you using the official
I'm reserving
ones?
Judgment. I'm trying everything I can get my paws on. I'm having to do this on the 1980s sci-fi box that's got a fairly old GeForce card in it, because there's no way I'm going to put it on the Dell just yet until I know I've got a working solution. I'm much in the same camp as Dave. I can't afford to take the Dell offline and potentially break it.
I've already expressed my reasons why my problems with a 10.04. If you're a new user, you can't. People, they might not work out that you've got to install the binary drivers, so it's going to assume that it works, but without 3D.
I have a big issue with that, because I'm one of those people that went looking around, trying to fix my problem with GNOME Shell, and started getting sucked deeper and deeper into the NVIDIA drivers issue, finding various sets of instructions that say, take this thing out, go get this PPA, install this set of drivers, and I suddenly thought, well, this is fine. I'm just about keeping up with this, and I've been on Linux for years. What a new user is going to make of this? This is just an ungodly mess.
Oh, no.
I'm going to upset a lot of people here, but...
You already have.
Why on earth are they so fussed about the open source drivers when they don't work? I would rather have drivers which work and work well than have drivers which don't work. I don't care if they're open source or not. The NVIDIA drivers work perfectly, and yet we must use open source drivers, but they don't work.
Richard Stallman will be sending the boys round even as we speak.
I think we're possibly reaching a decision point here in the production of Ubuntu, whether to adhere strongly to open source principles and make things a little bit annoying and ensure that it always stays a little bit niche, or make everything work and... off the sort of the zealots who form a considerable portion of Linux users. I mean, which offers the most benefits? When is the right moment to go much more mainstream?
Sooner rather than later. Since
no, it's all for the benefit of Ubuntu as a business model, you know.
Well, since Ubuntu now, especially with this release, we've had a lot of good press from non-Ubuntu users and non-Ubuntu publications. And I think if we're going to try and get more users now, especially as Windows becomes more of a problem for people and Ubuntu is becoming more useful for the average user, we need to now start making it more easier to use, which will mean having to use the closed source drivers.
I think we still need to wait and see. Give it another 6 months or so. See, let the public opinion of Windows 7 sour a little bit and then look for alternatives.
I'm actually with Mr. Jobs on this one. The sooner we kill Flash, yes, the sooner we kill Flash, the better off we'll be. Oh, we're having a very controversial show this time.
It would be very, very nice if everybody spontaneously switched to using Ubuntu as well. But I don't really think it's going to happen.
Should we get back on
track? Shall we carry on with the... Yes.
Yes.
So what were we talking about? I've forgotten.
How did you upgrade?
I keep doing clean installs. Because I've separated my data out onto a separate home partition, I can do that without destroying any data. And I do find that doing a clean install means that I don't have a lot of legacy baggage and rubbish cluttering up the disk and configuration files.
Right, I wish I could, but I can't now, so. If anyone's wondering if the upgrade works, it does.
Well, I shall be upgrading, if I can. I'll probably be doing it this evening, once I've tested out this live disk.
Wait for the mushroom clouds to rise above Reading sometime tonight.
It's happened before.
One tip I'll recommend to you if you're doing an upgrade is when you're going through the upgrade process, you should come up with a dialog box saying these applications or packages are not supported anymore. Mark those down before you continue. And then when you finish the upgrade, go into Synaptic and remove those packages because they're not used anymore in Ubuntu, which will save you some space and save you problems in the future.
Speaking of space, however, I just found a 1 terabyte hard drive, and I shall be using Ed's advice in order to use Clonezilla to upgrade, to just transfer everything I've got onto that drive.
Indeed. That was going to be my piece of advice. Before you do any clean installs or upgrades, do back everything up.
No, you just want to live life on the edge. You don't want to be back up.
That's true. Do things the Dave way. Never back anything up.
Are you sure you want to be doing this upgrade 2 days before your exam?
Yes.
You live on the edge. Next question.
Buttons left or right?
Left. I have moved everything to the left on all of the machines. No point hanging about.
I'll be doing exactly the same thing. In fact, from now on, I'll be writing with my left hand and using my knife in my left hand and my fork in the right, just to see if it's applicable to all areas of life. But on a serious note, I shall be using the buttons on the left when it comes around. Just because there are even more important buttons on the right-hand side from now on.
Hmm. Coming soon to a meerkat near us.
Indeed. Or a mongoose.
Right. Are you using Ubuntu One Music Store?
I haven't yet. I have that joy to come.
I'm not using anything Ubuntu One because it doesn't work. So we'll leave it there.
It's getting a bit funny lately, to be honest.
Just use Dropbox, guys.
I may do that. If it doesn't work, I shall switch to Dropbox. I shall abandon the sinking ship. Let's hope it's not sinking, though, because I like it.
But you can actually do all the Ubuntu One stuff with Dropbox, because you can sync your Tomboy notes with Dropbox. You can sync your contacts with Google contacts. You can sync your bookmarks with Dropbox. So the only thing you're missing is the Ubuntu One Music Store. But as I said before, Amazon does a better job. Are you using PTV?
Not yet, but it is on my list of things that I need to try because I have got to get some camera footage off one of the cameras. That would seem the obvious choice to have a go at.
Yep, I've started using it. It's really good, but just needs a few more features. Are you using GIMP or FSpot?
Definitely GIMP.
That's interesting because I'm using FSpot now. I haven't even bothered to install GIMP because all I need to do now is just crop photos. FSpot does a decent job of doing that.
The thing is, I think I use my computer very differently. I don't think I'll be using PTV, but I will be using GIMP because I'm interested in graphics as far as making designs and things goes and logos and whatever. And GIMP's really, really good for that, whereas I don't think FSpot has the tools.
Will you recommend Ubuntu to more people because of this new release?
I certainly will.
Well, I already recommend Ubuntu to pretty much everybody. Even if it's just an entirely command line release, I'd probably still recommend Ubuntu, just because I really, really don't like Mac or Microsoft.
I'm starting to recommend Ubuntu more just because it now looks really pretty and the social features, because of Facebook chat and Quibber, it's just quite good for that to recommend to my friends, the social aspect.
Ed, dig us out of this.
Final question. Is this the best release so far?
Personally, I think it could well be.
Doesn't sound like it, all these graphics issues.
In general terms, I think we need to give it a few weeks and see what the general population thinks of it. Because in theory, it should be the best release so far.
For me, it's...
Since it has the largest number in it, that's why in theory it should be the best release.
But it's not my favourite release. Mine's 7.10. It's a big step forward. And I think actually the last two releases have been big step forwards in pushing the desktop to the Ubuntu to the mainstream. So hopefully this trend will continue.
Let's hope it does. Okay. And what was the side note that you were bringing to our attention about system requirements having...
Oh, yes. what I didn't find interesting, I thought that's a surprise. They finally increased the system requirements of Ubuntu, because I made a complaint a few episodes back about the RAM usage being considerably higher in Ubuntu 10.04 compared to previous releases. And I've now upped it to a gigahertz processor and 512 megabytes of RAM, which is still okay in today's standard. But that brings it to the same system requirements as Windows Vista.
Ooh.
It is, obviously it's quick. We're not going to compare it to Windows Vista. It is quicker, but I'm just, they have finally increased the system requirements, because it's always been 256 since the first release, and finally they've upped the requirements. I think it's down to Gwibber, which now starts up, so which uses quite a lot of memory.
And the more social networking toys you throw in, the less memory you're going to have at the end.
Got an interesting news flash here. Just come up on BBC News here. Apparently, Internet Explorer's browser share market is now down below 60%, you might have heard. It used to be 95%. Firefox has gone up 24.5%. And Google Chrome is at 6.7%. And it was at 1.7% last year.
I'm annoyed at that, because I'm a huge Firefox fan. And I don't like the idea that Google Chrome's catching it up.
Well, I use Firefox for most things, and I do really like all the plugins and things you can get for Firefox. I find it very, very useful. There's a little backgrounds you can get as well. I do find Chrome to be a bit faster, though. So whenever I want to just quickly look something up, I tend to use Chrome for that.
Yeah, we're back to the browser wars of a few years ago.
Indeed.
Which I think is a good thing. That story doesn't surprise me, because Internet Explorer's share of the market has been heading south since about 12 months ago anyway. You've got two things have pushed it to accelerate. One is the European browser ballot fiasco, where the European Union imposed this on Microsoft for Windows 7 in the face of anti-competitive antitrust charges. So with that judgment, there came a whole stack of publicity stories about you have an alternative to Internet Explorer, whether or not you actually are buying a new copy of Windows or not. So people have suddenly become aware that there are alternatives out there. And the number of security exploits in Internet Explorer have been getting more and more publicity in amongst the press coverage of it. The solutions that the pundits have all been putting out is, well, in that case, don't use Internet Explorer. Here are these other alternatives instead. It has been losing its dominant position.
To support the Microsoft crowd, I don't think it's going to carry on going south for much longer, because IE9 is looking very promising, and I'm becoming a bit of a fan of what they've got planned, because they've got HTML5 and CSS3 support, which is nothing new there, but their JavaScript engine is going to be faster than Google Chrome's latest build, which is quite an achievement, and they're going to use GPU acceleration by using DirectX to render the web pages, which basically means they showed an example of Google Maps. And when you're running in an older version of Internet Explorer, it does about 15 frames per second when you're zooming in and moving around. But IE9 will do it at 60 frames per second because of the GPU acceleration, which would be the first browser to do it.
I think
we're reaching the next stage of the arms race. So the fact that Microsoft are getting there maybe slightly sooner than everybody else is good, but everybody else is also working on versions of browsers that will have GPU acceleration and HTML5. So at some stage we'll reach some kind of parity in features, and then we'll really see who's kicking backside the most. Shall we do the gaming section?
Yes.
Why not?
Gaming section.
Right, this is the biggest news to hit Linux in years. This is huge. It's very exciting. There's a huge chance now that Steam will be coming to Linux. And Steam, you've probably heard before, is a digital distribution service on Windows, which provides a platform to buy, download, and install games with very good DRM protection. So all the publishers are very happy to use Steam. And ever since its introduction back in 2004, the PC gaming market has increased because of the DRM on the Steam platform. And it's always been Windows-based, but in the past month, they finally announced it will be coming to the Mac and have released a beta now. And they're going to be bringing over quite a few Valve games, including Half-Life, Left 4 Dead, and Team Fortress 2. And it appears that it'll be coming to Linux as well. Because in the past, if there's been a few news stories saying that Valve have hired a Linux software engineer, the source engine which powers Valve's games is coming to Linux because it's using OpenGL and there's some Linux libs in some of the games. But I've always dismissed that as a very small chance of it happening. But the biggest piece of evidence is in the Steam Mac Beta installer, where it has an instruction where it checks to see what operating system it's running on, and it'll check if it's running macOS 10 or Linux, and then load the appropriate lib files for that operating system. And on that Phoronix article, which will be in the show notes, there's a forum thread attached, and there's about 20 pages of people finding the Linux installer and getting all the Linux files together and running the installer and see if to get Steam to work. And what they've managed to do in the past few days is get Steam to load, get the updater to update Steam, and in the past day or two, they finally got a GUI of Steam running in Linux natively. So we're expecting an announcement within the next few weeks that it will be happening. So it's quite exciting that finally the gaming market is going to take Linux seriously by bringing a huge platform to Linux. And I also think that it's going to be a stepping board for developers to use Linux as a gaming platform, because when you look at commercial games on Linux, especially with id Software and Splash Damage, all they've done is when they added Linux support to their games, they've just created a small shell script and put it somewhere on their website hidden away, and it's usually difficult to find, or people don't know that there's Linux support for that specific game. And now they've got Steam, all the developers can put all their games on Steam, and it'd be a lot easier to advertise that game's on Linux and get it running.
It's amazing. It is amazing. No longer will we have to faff around trying to get Steam to work in Wine when it doesn't, and it breaks, and it doesn't update, or it just crashes. If Valve starts supporting Linux, then I think Ubuntu's pretty much home free as far as I'm concerned. Most of my friends who I've managed to persuade almost to start using Ubuntu native as their regular OS have been swayed in the other direction by the lack of games. And it really is a rather big issue, especially for your young population. And games are no longer something that little kids play with. That's something that everybody needs to do now to sort of cool off.
Well, this is the final piece for me to actually not worry about switching back to Windows, because this is what I want. I wanted Steam on Linux. I wanted to play Half-Life and Left 4 Dead natively. And finally I can. Obviously, when it gets announced, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but it's pretty set since we've got a Linux client actually working.
They work quite well in Wine, to be honest.
Yes, but we want it native. We don't want to be using
Indeed,
Wine.
Indeed, exactly. Of course we want it native. Wine's only a stepping stone. More of a sidestep than a forward march of progress.
Just found out in the past few days, which I forgot to add to the show notes, is that I've started playing a game called Osmo, which is a puzzle game where you navigate I don't know how to describe it, it's like a bubble around, like it's like space. You navigate a bubble around and gathering other bubbles into a bigger bubble, and you've got to absorb all the bubbles on this area of space. And I'm going to do a review of it in issue 37, and I've contacted the developers because it's a commercial game, it's on Windows, Mac and Linux, and they've given me a review copy of the game for free, so I'll be reviewing that in issue 37. And I think you need to all try this out. There's a dev file to download, and it's the most relaxing game you'll ever play. It's brilliant. Even Robin, I think you'll appreciate it. Even though you're not a gamer, I think you'll appreciate it.
Okay.
So it sounds a bit like Katamari Damashi.
I haven't got a clue what it is.
It's all when you're a little alien and you have to roll around sticking to things.
Sounds like Coventry on a Saturday night.
You have to get your own pick up bars and towns and things. Very strange.
I'm having one of those moments where I'm just thinking, well, what illegal substances have I just ingested to be
I really don't know. Okay, I'll read this. The primary story in this is the from the Wikipedia article. The primary story in Katamari Damacy deals with the aftermath of the planet-sized king of all the cosmos's binge-drinking spree that wiped out all the stars and all the other celestial bodies in the sky. The king, who appears to be chronically dissatisfied with his 10-centimeter-tall sun's small size, charges the prince to go to Earth with a Katamari, which is a magical ball that allows anything smaller than it to stick to it, and make it grow, and collect enough material for him to recreate the stars and constellations. The prince is successful, and the skies return to normal, presumably without Earth being there. Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Over to you.
So, I'm back from my lengthy break, and you don't have to write in to say just how much you miss me. In anticipation of a large number of responses to my last piece, in which I lamented the terrible lack of RPGs available for Ubuntu, I spent a lot of time over the past few weeks going through as many complete and near-complete RPGs as I could find. I started by going through the 6 titles that appear when you type RPG into the software centre. Then filling that, I found a neat page at gwos, spelled gwos.org/doku, which is doku.php/games:RPG. It currently lists almost every single game for Linux, betas included. I started going through that as well. As, obviously, I've had things to do other than play games for the past few weeks, I didn't manage to make all that much headway, but I can make a start telling you what I've found out so far. So, number 1, FreeDink. Dink Smallwood, touted as an adventure-slash-role-playing game similar to Zelda, is an interesting one to start with, as being similar to Zelda, in my books, makes something about as much of an RPG as Mario, Metroid, or Tetris. That is, not at all. The role you play is of a man with a sword whose job it is to walk around hitting people and taking their money in order to buy larger swords. It's really a plot of the sort of stuff epics are made of. Lack of role-playing aside, it's quite an enjoyable game, and the twisted humour warned about in the description plays a prominent enough role to keep things interesting. On that topic, though, while most of the humour revolves around slightly tongue-in-cheek references to the engine's crappy graphics and to the ridiculously two-dimensional personalities of the non-player characters, the bit where the main character's aunt is repeatedly violently abused by her husband and you're given the choice of either ignoring it and mocking her or brutally murdering the husband in front of her goes a little far, in my opinion. It's not too easy and not too hard, and while there are a few times the lack of space to manoeuvre makes things a little frustrating, the save points are well distributed enough to make up for it. One thing, though, that is a bit annoying is its size. You can finish this game in a couple of hours at the most. This is a problem that seems set to become a general theme in this review, and is generally shared with a lot of the others as well. Yes, I'm well aware that Dink Smallwood is intended as more of a demo, an introduction to an engine designed so that people can make their own games, but it's more of the fact itself that perplexes me. Why go to all the effort of painstakingly designing your own game engine over a number of years and making it accessible for everyone if you're going to stop once you get to the easy, fun and rewarding part? They've already shown they have the patience and skill to write their own game. Why stop there? Why not write a big story, throw some characters in, draw some enemies, design some dungeons? You know, the kind of things we all got up to when we were kids but had to stop because we didn't know how to program anything. Do all those years of doing an engineering degree really suck your soul so dry that you become completely unable to produce anything creative? I mean, even if it was total rubbish, it would be a good deal better than a lot of the commercial games being released today. Number 2, Waste's Edge. This game is intended entirely as a demo for the add-on's Hell engine, designed to run RPGs like the good old Final Fantasy ones from way back when, so it can be forgiven for being a little short. Even if playing it really lazily yields a little more than an hour of gameplay. The full game has been in the works since the early 2000s, however, and while there is still quite a bit of activity on the production team's site, it is quite a mystery as to what they've been doing all this time. The graphics are very, very simple. The team have managed to preserve much of the charm of the games of that period of RPGs. There's also the kind of detail I really respect in a game of its kind, as a lot of the original ones lack the ability to keep you captivated, both physically and mentally, in the same place for an extended period, which this one from the outset succeeds in doing. I can only hope that they continue this in any further releases. Gameplay is exclusively movement and dialogue based, which they claim, I assume jokingly, was a deliberate move to speed up release times. It doesn't really suffer for it though, and what it achieves is a strong sense of anticipation. I still need to get a move on though. 3, FreeDroid. I only played a little bit of this as I was quite frankly put off by the blatant marketing of open source principles. I can see this person, the person responsible for the plot and character design, was someone with a deep, deep hatred of all things Microsoft, and even related to large corporations in general. And while this is not a problem in itself, using it as the basis for an entire plot is a bit, well, boring in actual fact. The voice acting also sounds a bit strange and unofficial, a bit like you're playing a game with a bunch of sock puppets. In short, I didn't really have a close enough look at this to either recommend or warn people away from it, but if you're feeling a bit starved for RPGs and you value interesting gameplay more than plot, you've nothing really to lose from giving it a go. 4. Various betas. Always exasperated at this point, I took it upon myself to look at some of the beta RPGs available on open source platforms. I'm quite surprised to say there's actually a vast selection of them available. I'll cover them all quite briefly though, as I had only little time to look at a couple, and I feel it'd be a bit unfair to do full reviews at this stage. Age of Decadence. This is a commercial game, and only the Windows binary of the combat demo is available at the moment, but they assure us all the final version will be available for Linux. Concept looks very pretty, being in a sort of post-apocalyptic rundown steampunk style, so I think this is one to look out for. Alacrost. Heroes of Alacrost looks nice enough, and while it has a few issues, seems to be going through a period of rather heightened development. Getting it to compile and run properly, though, was a bit of a problem, so I'll wait out on this one. Scourge. Scourge actually seems to be quite playable at the moment, and it compiled and ran for me with little issue. It looks rather messy, though, with lines and blobs everywhere, and looks like something could go wrong at any minute. They're working on a new engine at the moment, though, so a lot of that looks like it'll be cleaned up pretty soon. 5. KQ. This is the point where I'm very nearly proved wrong in my original statement, as here is a nicely polished and well-designed RPG with all the elements I generally look for in one. I say almost, however, and it seems this is another one of the eternal beta games, almost completely doomed by its abandonment by its original designer. It also suffered along the same lines as a lot of other people, it seems, when trying to get this to work properly. While I had no issue at all installing and running it, it totally refused to cooperate with my old friend and constant nemesis, Pulse Audio. I wanted to go and do anything drastic, like changing my sound system all over again, like I used to have to do in ALSA with Big to get any sound running at all, for the risk of breaking the majority of things that worked perfectly well. I almost gave up hope of ever being able to use it properly and consigned it to the pile of games to be reviewed at some time in a distant future. A few days ago, I came up with the brilliant idea of downloading the Windows binary and running it in Wine, and believe it or not, it now works perfectly. As I haven't had very long to take a proper look at it, and I feel it really deserves a review all of its own, and by saying that it looks very nice, has a good range of characters, a good amount of dialogue, and really nice music, but I hear it ends rather abruptly.
A bit like your review.
Indeed, you see, so I did there. A bit of referentiality there.
Referentiality, is that a proper word? Oh, never mind, we won't go there again.
Yeah.
Very good. I've had a brainwave. I could actually put...
Oh my god, you'll kill us all.
I know. I could actually put... Look, it's not just Mark that's got a space brain from the future, you know? I could actually put a transcript of your speaking so that people can read it if they're that desperate or can't understand you.
Oh,
we'll put that up on,
really
on one of the sites.
Really
you are still a little swift, shall we say. And any comments, Ed?
I'm sorry to say, but I've looked at the RPGs you've suggested, but none of them what I'm after. I want, as I said to you, a 3D first-person shooter RPG.
Yeah, there are some decent Mimorphicas, but I'm not a big fan of these. In fact, I've never played a Mimorphica in my entire life.
I like Mimorphicas, actually. That's one of my favourite genres, actually, Mimorphicas. But a bit expensive.
Well, you're right, though. I think there are a few open-source ones that look all right. But there's one really, really good 3D one. I don't know what it was called, though.
Okay.
Well, that's not really much help, is it?
Hang on, give me a second. I'll find it out, then, if you're going to whinge at me like that.
Everybody's going to think we're either drunk or on drugs this episode.
Here we are. I found it. Forsaken Sanctum. That's what it's called. There you go. That's what it's called. You heard of that?
Thank you.
Well, it looks very nice.
Yes, but it has the word Forsaken in the title, which is never a good sign in my opinion.
I've just looked at Forsaken Sanctum, Dave. I know why I never tried it. It's because it's not out yet. There's no download button, so it does look quite good though from the screenshots.
I probably won't play it though.
I might keep that one in mind then. Thank you.
I mean, there are loads. That website I mentioned, you must have seen it at some point.
I have seen that website, yes.
It's got a huge list on it though. Massive list. But a lot of them are just Windows games that have mentioned the word Linux somewhere on their website.
Shall we do the feedback section?
Yes.
Feedback section.
Of quick roundup on the feedback from episode 4. I got an anonymous one, which says, "Hi, really like the show, but you must sort out some higher quality microphones because I often can't understand what's being said. Keep up the good work." I'm hoping that I'm hoping this episode is better because even I can hear that we all sound slightly better. So hopefully we've addressed that one.
So I've got Mr. T here. I'll call him. "I really like the show. You guys are getting it up there in time. Podcast 4 is 56 minutes long, so you're going to target a 1-hour show." Well, to that, I'd say, well, I think we've already got several hours worth of recording here. So if you wanted a 1-hour show, it wouldn't be too much of a stretch. "And how about a bit of background on how the show is being produced, software and OS-wise? You have all the Linux info. I really like to learn any and all things Linux. I'd like to do a video podcast of the show." Okay. I don't know what it means. I'd like to see a video podcast of the show. Well, I'd suggest it's probably not such a good idea. And as far as background info, I mean, I think we spray enough of our complaints about various things on our computer all the time, unless they get edited out. But yes, they're all there somewhere.
For Mr. T. Ollinger, or possibly Miss T. Ollinger, I have no idea. Wave said, "I would like to do a video podcast of the show. If you're volunteering, then you're quite welcome to give that a go. If you're asking us to do a video podcast of the show, you really don't know what you're letting yourself in for."
I don't see how someone else could do a video podcast of the show. I don't know what that would involve. It's just getting our recorded voices and then sort of doing it with a Punch and Judy style stage, or perhaps with some sock puppets.
Some people might say that the sock puppets would be an improvement. Ed, can you do the next one?
Line of Severance likes that the show notes are now clickable.
Yay! Well, we did manage to sort out the feed for the show notes in WordPress, so we'll try and keep that going because it is a huge improvement. Plan is that we have two RSS feeds, one for OGG and one for MP3.
Excellent.
Next one, Daryl said, "Great podcast so far. I use CrashPlan for Ubuntu backups and it works fine for me. Flat fee for unlimited storage. It's cross-platform Linux, Mac and Windows, and I would say that I did go and have a look at CrashPlan and it is one of those commercial solutions, so you do have to spend some money on it." Daryl also says, "You do have KDE users in your audience, even if we're in the minority. I have no idea what the breakdown is between KDE, XFCE, GNOME, or anything else is at moments. You're not necessarily the minority, it's just that you're the first one that's piped up and told us that you're on KDE. Yeah. Continuing, I have been a loyal Kubuntu user since Breezy Badger, and I have no plans to switch to GNOME. I don't know if Dave was making an effort to speak more slowly, but he was easier to understand in episode 4 than in previous ones." See if you can pronounce this one for us.
Okay. by Morton, who says, "You went through some good games. If you looked at UFO AI, gives me a link there. It's you don't want to call it a copy, but something heavily inspired by the XCOM games. I mean, I've been playing a few things that are heavily inspired by other games, specifically Wormux, which is actually a very good game.
It's very good, yes.
I've been playing that a lot. I'll try and fit that into a later review. But I'm giving UFO a brief look, but I haven't played it yet. But yeah, so thanks for the heads up, and I'll give that a go. So thanks, Morton.
And that's Morton Juljohansson Zoldafair.
You need to read out that name. You need to preserve anonymity here, Robin.
I just thought I'd like to show off and get some.
That's what you meant by see if you can pronounce this. I thought you meant insulting my ability to read.
No. Well, I was insulting your ability to read. I was also insulting your ability to speak. But
you need to insult that.
He gave us his surname, so we've read it out. So that was episode 4. And episode 5, Ed.
Thorn loves the podcast and keep up the good Ubuntu work.
Excellent. Casey McNeelidge says, "Good for you, great post." But I think that might be in response to something that I put further down the list, so I'll come back to that one.
Mr. Shadow, very cool name there, Mr. Shadow. Love to hear your podcast. Keep it up, guys. Well, thank you. I shall do that.
I'm going to do the next two together because in response to episode 5, which had our cunning Mickey take of Mr. Leo Laporte's idents, we had two responses. The first from Alan Hambidge, who's written to us before, who said, "Hello, the podcast was extremely professional and informative. However, the opening first couple of minutes are crass and awful. It's taken me 5 episodes for somebody to give us..." give us an opinion that we're crass and awful, but...
What was wrong with the opening? What was the opening, anyway, from episode 5?
Go back and listen to the bit of preamble on episode 5, and you can make up your own mind whether it's crass and awful. Almost the immediate next response that we got was from MacBear, who says, I have enjoyed listening to this podcast. As a regular listener to the Twit podcasts, I got a real hoot out of the intro. Keep up the good work. So that goes to prove you can please some of the people all of the time, or all of the people none of the time, but you can't please all of the people any of the time. Something like that, anyway.
I don't know if that sounds about right.
Then we come to the controversial part of the feedback. Would somebody like to read out what...
Well, I'll read it, since I will not be offended in the slightest, since I'm not there at all. And since I have constantly and repeatedly stated my absolute love of KDE, and how it's nothing to be ashamed of at all. OMG, I downloaded this podcast mainly to see the KDE 4.4 review. It's a great thing to hear a review from somebody who obviously has no tolerance or respect for things he is reviewing. I'm being sarcastic, of course. But really, what did you hope to achieve with that review? Fill up podcast time to make sure no one dares to try a KDE-based distro. When you talk about how much you don't like KDE and all things K, you sound alive, but when you do an actual review, your tone remains a constant, like when reading or something. So, you sound dead, Robin, I'm afraid. So, sorry for this much negative comments, but I'm pretty sure you asked for it. It does not matter if you like KDE or not. If you're going to do a review, I repeat, a review, you can do it with less personal charge bashing. How would you feel if you heard someone representing to the world something you love, like Ubuntu, in such a biased and harsh way? Like Windows 7 doing a review on Ubuntu on TV or something? I bet you would feel like I do now. If you already have a predetermined view about hating or extremely not liking something, why do you have to do a review about it in public? Please, GNOME fanboys, damn your KDE fanboys, maybe generate a buzz by starting a flame war in order to increase popularity of this podcast. You have absolutely every right to not like KDE4, and you have absolutely every right to publicly spread your views. It's not very professional to pack that behind a podcast title, KDE 4.4 Review. Call it yet another biased KDE bashing session. KDE haters, come and rejoice. Yeah, that's a pretty catchy title. I think we'll use that one next time.
That was entirely down to me, and that was my pre-recorded KDE 4.4 review. Somehow think that Mirza has actually somewhat misinterpreted, so I jumped back on our forum in order to reply, and I said this. I thought I had made it clear that I quite liked KDE 4.4. It overturned some of my previous prejudices, and I gave 4.0 the share of grief it had previously earned from lots of other reviewers. Now, I'm not in the business of being anybody else's fanboy, as you should know by now that I go for the ego-driven, overinflated, opinionated rant, and I expect to give GNOME 2.3 a fairly good bashing in the same vein fairly soon. So if Mirza is sufficiently motivated and upset to come back to us, I'd say give us the review that you think it deserves. Sell us on KDE 4.4, and we might actually find that we're in agreement.
Oh, why not? Why don't you send us a flak? We can see the next episode.
Indeed. You know, record us a KDE review. We'll take any contributions we can get. It is a very good point. Oh, you know, we're not taking any particular editorial stance on anything. If we review something and we don't like it, we're perfectly within our rights to say we don't like it. Nobody's paying us to do this, and they're not paying us to like things. We'll just carry on expressing an opinion. And if you don't happen to like our opinion, then you're quite welcome to write in and tell us you don't like it. We have very thick skins between us, and we're not going to take it personally.
Yeah, Jerry Reed complained about my audio being fairly rubbish in episode 4, I believe he was referring to, because it was pretty bad. So I've just said it was pretty good down to my Wi-Fi connection, and it should be better for episode 6, and hopefully it is.
Very clear, and there's a noticeable absence of mothers this time as well.
And hoovers. And that was our feedback section.
Feedback. You can post comments and feedback on the podcast page at fullcirclemagazine.org/podcast. Send us a comment to podcast@fullcirclemagazine.org. You can also send us a comment by recording an audio clip of no more than 30 seconds and sending it to the same address. Comments and audio may be edited for length. Please remember, this is a family-friendly show.
In which case, given that we've just gone over the 2-hour mark on this recording...
I said that. It would happen.
You did. In that case, gentlemen, shall we wrap that one up?
Yes. It's time for tea.
That was Full Circle Episode 6, and it's goodbye from Miss Red Hewitt.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Mr. Dave Wilkins.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from me, Robin Catlin. Goodbye.